She could tell right away what was odd about the box, and it bloomed clear in her mind. The shape and space of the box congealing in her thoughts like wax chambers in a beehive. The box had a false bottom in it, a secret compartment. And inside the false bottom, Sanchia's talons told her, was something small and wrapped in linen. She paused, thinking about this. 20,000 devats? For this thing? But then, it was not for her to think about. Her purpose had been to get the box and nothing more. Sark had been very clear about that. And Sanchia was well favored by their clients because she always did as she was asked. No more, no less. In 3 days, she'd hand the box off to Sark, and then she'd never think about it again. She put the box in the false floor, closed the floor, and shut the closet. She confirmed that her door and shutters were secure. Then she walked over to her bed, sat, placed her stiletto on the floor beside her, and breathed deep. Home, she thought, and safe. But her room did not look much like a home. If anyone had happened to peer inside, they'd have thought Sanchia lived like the most ascetic of monks. She had only a plain chair, a bucket, an unadorned table, and a bare bed. No sheets, no pillows. Yet this was how she was forced to live. She preferred sleeping in her own clothes to sleeping in sheets. Not only was it difficult to adjust to lying in yet more cloth, but bed sheets were prone to lice and fleas and other vermin, and the feeling of their many tiny legs picking their way across her skin drove her absolutely mad. And when her scar burned hot, she couldn't bear to have any of her other senses overloaded either. Too much light and too many colors was like having nails in her skull. Food was even worse. Eating meat was out of the question. Blood and fat did not taste delicious to her, but instead carried an overpowering sensation of rot, decay, and putrefaction. All those muscle fibers and tendons remembered being part of a living creature, of being connected, whole, bright with life. To taste meat was to know instantly and profoundly that she was gnawing on a hunk of a corpse. It made her gag. Sanchia lived almost entirely off of plain rice mixed with beans and weak cane wine. She did not touch strong alcohol. She needed total control over her senses just to function. And any water found in the commons, of course, was not to be trusted. Sanchia sat on her bed, bent forward, rocking back and forth with anxiety. She felt small and alone, as she often did after a job, and she missed the one creature comfort she desired the most, human company. Sanchia was the only person who'd ever been in her room, or in her bed, for touching people was unbearable. It wasn't quite like she heard their thoughts because people's thoughts, despite what most believed, were not a smooth, linear narration. They were more like a giant hot cloud of bellowing impulses and neuroses, and when she touched a person's skin, that hot cloud filled up her skull. The press of flesh, the touch of warm skin, these sensations were perhaps the most intolerable of all for her. But perhaps it was better to be solitary. There was less risk that way. She breathed deep for a moment, trying to calm her mind. "You're safe," she said to herself. "And alone, and free, for another day." Then she pulled her hood over her head, tied it tight, lay down, and shut her eyes. But sleep never came. After an hour of lying there, she sat up, took off her hood, lit a candle, looked at her closed closet door, and thought. "This bothers me," she thought. "A lot." The problem, she decided, was a matter of risks. Sanchia lived her life very carefully, or at least as carefully as one could, while making a living climbing towers and breaking into places full of dangerous armed men. and she always sought to minimize any potential hazards. And the more she thought about it, possessing something small that was worth the nigh inconceivable sum of 20,000 devats while not knowing what that thing actually was. Well, it now felt mad, especially if she was going to hold on to it for 3 scrumming days. Because the most valuable things in the city of Tavan were undoubtedly scribing designs, the strings of sigils that made scribed rigs work. Scribing designs took a great deal of effort and talent to compose, and were the most protected property of any merchant house. Get the right scribing design, and you could instantly start making all kinds of augmented devices at a foundry, devices that could easily be worth a fortune. Though Sanxia had often been offered work to go after merchant house designs, she and Sark always turned it down, since housebreakers who ran such jobs often wound up pale, cold, and bobbing in a canal. And though Sark had assured her that this job had not been about scribing designs, 20,000 devats could make anyone too stupid for their own good. She sighed, trying to quell the dread in her stomach. She walked over to the closet, opened it, opened her false floor, and took the box out. She looked at it for a long time. It was unadorned pine with a brass clasp. She took off her gloves and felt it with her bare hands. Again, the box's form and shape bled into her mind, a large cavity full of papers. Again, she sensed the box's false bottom with a linen-wrapped item beneath. Nothing else. And no way for someone to know she'd opened the box then. Sanxia took a breath and opened it. She felt sure the papers would be covered in sigil strings, which would have been as good as a death warrant for her. But they were not. They were elaborate-looking sketches of what looked like old carved stones with writing on them. Someone had written notes on the bottom of a sketch. Sanxia was only a little better than literate, but she tried her best and read. Artifacts of the Occidental Empire. It is common knowledge that the Hierophants of the Old Empire utilized a number of astounding tools in their works, but their methods remain unclear to us. While our modern-day scribing persuades objects that their reality is something that it is not, the Occidental Hierophants were apparently able to use scribing to alter reality directly, commanding the world itself to instantly and permanently change. Many have theorized about how this was possible, but none have conclusive answers. More questions arise when we study the stories of Crisides the Great himself, first of the Occidental Hierophants. There are many tales and legends of Crisides utilizing some kind of invisible assistant, sometimes a sprite or spirit or entity, often kept in a jar or box that he could open at his discretion, to help him in his labors. Was this entity another alteration that the Hierophants had made to reality? Or did it exist at all? We do not know. But there seems to be some connection to the greatest and most mysterious of the tales of Crisides the Great, that he built his own artificial god to govern the whole of the world. If Crisides was in possession of some kind of invisible entity, perhaps it was but a rough prototype for this last and greatest iteration. Sanxia put the paper down. She understood absolutely none of this. She'd heard something once about the Occidentals during her time in Tavan. Some kind of fairy story about ancient giants or maybe angels. But no one had ever claimed the Hierophants were real. Yet whoever had written these notes, perhaps the owner of the box, certainly seemed to think so. But she knew these papers weren't the real treasure. She dumped them out and set them aside. She reached into the box, touched 2 fingers to the bottom, and slid the false bottom away. Below was the small item wrapped in linen, about as long as your hand. Sanchia reached for it, but paused. She couldn't afford to screw up this payout. She needed to get the money together to pay a physicera who could fix the scar on her head, fix what was wrong with her, make her somewhat normal, or close to it. She rubbed the scar on the side of her head as she looked inside the box. She knew that somewhere under her scalp, screwed into her skull, was a fairly large metal plate, and on that plate were some complicated sigils. She didn't know anything about the commands there, but she knew that they were almost certainly the source of her talents. She also knew that the fact that the plate had been forcibly implanted inside her would not matter one whit to the merchant houses. A scribed human was somewhere between an abomination and a rare, invaluable specimen, and they'd treat her accordingly. Which was why her operation would be so expensive. Sanchia would have to pay a black market physicera more than the merchant houses were willing to reward them for handing her in. And the merchant houses were willing to pay a lot. She looked at the linen-wrapped item in her hand. She had no idea what it was. But despite Sark's warnings, the risks of not knowing were just too high. She put the box down, took out the item, and began unwrapping it. As she did so, she caught a glint of gold. Just a gold piece? A piece of gold jewelry? But then she pulled the cloth away and saw it was not jewelry. She looked at the item lying on the linen in the palm of her hand. It was a key. A large, long key made of gold, with an intricate, terribly strange tooth, and a rounded head that sported an oddly carved hole. To Sanchia, the hole faintly resembled the outline of a butterfly. "What in hell?" she said aloud. Sanchia peered closely at it. It was a curious piece, but she couldn't see why it would be worth all this. Then she saw them. There, along the edge of the key, and curling around the tooth. Etchings. The key was scribed. But the commands were so slender, so delicate, so complex. They were like nothing she'd ever seen before. But what was stranger still? If this key was scribed, why couldn't she hear it? Why didn't it murmur in the back of her mind like every other scribed device she'd ever encountered? This doesn't make any sense, she thought. She touched a single bare finger to the gold key. And the second she did, she heard a voice in her mind. Not the usual avalanche of sensations, but a real, actual voice, so clear it sounded like someone was standing right next to her, speaking rapidly in a bored tone. Oh, great. First the box and now this. Ah, look at her. I bet she's never even heard of soap. Sanchia let out a gasp and dropped the key. It fell to the floor, and she jumped back from it like it was a rabid mouse. The key just sat there, much as any key would. She stared around herself. She was, as she knew full well, completely alone in this room. She crouched down and looked at the key. Then she reached down and carefully touched it. Instantly, the voice sprang to life in her ear. Can't have heard me. It's impossible. But yeah, she's definitely looking at me like she heard me, and... Okay, now she's touching me again. Yeah, this is probably bad. Sanchia took her finger away like it had been burned. She looked around herself again, wondering if she were going mad. This is impossible, she muttered. Then, throwing caution to the wind, she picked up the key. Nothing. Silence. Maybe she'd imagined it. Then the voice said, I'm imagining this, right? You can't actually hear me, can you? Sanchia's eyes shot wide. Oh, hell, you can hear me, can't you? She blinked, wondering what to do. She said aloud, yes. Crap, how can you do that? How can you hear me? I haven't met anyone who could hear me, and hell, I don't know. I can't remember the last time. Then again, I can't really remember all that much, truth be told.
This is impossible, said Sanchia for the second time.
What is?
Said the voice.
You're a...
A what?
She swallowed. A key.
I'm a key. Yes. I didn't really think that was under dispute.
Right, but a talking key.
Right. And you're some grimy girl who can hear me,
said the voice in her ear.
I've been talking for a hell of a lot longer than you've been alive, kid. So really, I'm the normal one here.
Sanchia laughed madly. This is insane. It's insane. That's got to be it. I've gone insane.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know what your situation is, but that wouldn't have anything to do with me.
The voice cleared his throat.
So, where am I? And, oh, that's right. I'm Clef, by the way. Now, who in the hell are you?
Chapter 4 Sanchia put the key back in the false floor in her closet, slammed it shut, and then slammed the closet door closed. She stared at the closet for a moment, breathing hard. Then she walked over to her apartment door, unlocked the 6 locks, and peered out into her hallway. Empty, which made sense since it was probably 3 in the morning by now. She shut the door, locked it, went to the shutters, unlocked them, and looked outside, panic fluttering in her ribcage like a trapped moth. Again, no movement in the street. She didn't know why she was doing this. Perhaps it was sheer compulsion, to have something so wild, so insane, so unbelievable happen to her, had to invite danger. Yet she could see none coming. Not yet, at least. She closed her shutters and locked them. Then she sat on her bed holding her stiletto. She wasn't sure what she was going to do with it. Stab the key? But it felt better to be holding it. She stood, walked back to her closet door, and said,
I'm going to open the door and take you out now. All right?
Silence. She let out a shuddering breath. What the hell did we get mixed up in? She was used to scribed devices muttering things, sure, but to have one directly address her like an over-caffeinated street vendor? She opened the closet door, opened the false floor, and looked at the key. Then she gritted her teeth, stiletto still in her left hand, and picked it up with her right. Silence. Perhaps she'd dreamed it or imagined it.
Then the voice spoke up in her mind. That was kind of an overreaction, wasn't it?
Sanchia flinched. I don't think so, she said.
If my chair starts talking to me,
it's going out the goddamn window. What the hell are you?
I told you what I am. I'm Clef. You never told me your name, you know.
I don't need to tell a damn object my name, said Sanchia angrily. I'm also not going to introduce myself to the doorknob.
You need to calm down, kid. You're going to give yourself a fit if you stay this worked up. And I don't want to be stuck in the saddest apartment in the whole world with some grimy girl's decaying corpse.
What merchant house made you? She demanded.
Huh? House? Merchants what?
What merchant house made you? Dandolo? Candiano? Morsini? Michelle? Which one of them made this thing you are, whatever it is?
I don't know what the hell you're talking about. What thing is it that you think I am?
A scribed device, she said, exasperated. Altered, augmented, elevated, whatever damn term the Campo people use. You're a rig, aren't you? Clef was silent for a long while. Then he said,
Okay. I'm trying to think of how to answer that, but quick question. What's scribed mean?
You don't know what scribing is? It's the symbols that are drawn on you, these things that make you who you are, what you are. She looked closer at his tooth. She didn't know much about scribing. As far as she was aware, it took about 1,000 certifications and degrees to do it. But she hadn't ever seen sigils like these.
Where did you come from?
Ah, now that question I can answer, said Clef.
Okay, then tell me.
Not until you at least tell me your name. You've compared me to a doorknob and a chair, And you've also said I was a rig.
He said the word with palpable contempt.
I feel like I'm entitled to something resembling decent treatment here.
Sanchia hesitated. She wasn't sure why she was so reluctant to tell Clef her name. Perhaps it felt like something out of a children's story, the foolish girl who gives her name away to the wicked demon. But finally, she relented and said, Sanchia.
Sanchia?
He said the word like it was the name of a grotesque dish. Yes, my name is Sanchia.
Sanchia, huh?
Said Clef.
Terrible name. Anyways, you already know I'm Clef, so...
And where did you come from, Clef? She said, frustrated.
That's easy, said Clef. The dark.
You, what? The dark? You're from the dark?
Yeah, someplace dark. Very dark.
Where is this dark place?
How should I know? I don't have much frame of reference here, kid. All I know is that between it and here is a whole lot of water.
So they shipped you over the ocean. Yeah, I figured that. Who shipped you over here?
Some guys. Dirty, smelly, jabbered a lot. I expect you'd have gotten on pretty well with them.
Where were you before the dark?
There's nothing before the dark. There's just the dark. I was always in the dark as far as I can recall.
There was a note of anxiety in his voice at that. What was with you in the dark? Asked Sanchia.
Nothing. There was just me and the dark and nothing else. For...
He paused. For how long? Clef laughed miserably.
Think of a long time, then multiply that times 10, then multiply that times 100, then 1,000. That still doesn't come close to how long I was there, in the dark, alone.
Sanchia was silent. That sounded like something akin to hell to her, and it sounded like Clef was still shaken by it.
Still not sure if this place is an improvement, said Clef. What is this, a prison? Who'd you kill? It must have been someone really great to be punished like this.
This is my apartment.
You live this way voluntarily? What, you can't get yourself even, like, one picture?
Sanchia decided to cut to it. Clef, you know I stole you, right?
No. You stole me? From who?
I don't know, from a safe.
Ah, now who's got the shitty, unsatisfying answers? How's it feel? I guess that's why you're acting so damned panicked.
I'm panicked, said Sanchia, because to get you, I had to do a ton of things that could get me harpered in a blink.
Harpered? What's that?
Sighing, Sanchia quickly tried to tell Clef that harpering referred to a method of public torture and execution in Tavan. The subject was placed in a stockade, and the harper, a long, thin piece of extremely strong wire, attached to a small, scribed device, was placed in a loop around their neck, or perhaps their hands or feet or delicates. The scribed device would then, much to the subject's distress, begin cheerily retracting the wire, tightening the loop inch by inch, until finally the wire bit into and completely amputated the chosen extremity. It was an extremely popular spectacle in Tavan, but Sanchia had never attended a harpering, mostly because she knew that, in her line of work, there was a not insignificant chance it could be Herbits in the loop.
Oh, well, I can see how that makes this all pretty urgent.
Right. So, you don't know who owned you, do you?
Nope.
Or who made you?
That presumes I was made, which is something I'm not sure of yet.
That's insane. Someone had to have made you.
Why?
She couldn't come up with a good answer to that. She was mainly trying to figure out exactly how much danger she was in. Clef was obviously, undoubtedly, the most advanced scribed device she'd ever seen. And she was pretty sure he was a scribed device. But she wasn't sure why someone would be willing to pay 40 fortunes for him. A key that did little more than insult you in your mind would have pretty low value to the merchant houses. Then she realized there was an obvious question she hadn't asked yet. "Clef," she said, "since you're a key and all, what exactly do you op-"
"You know you don't have to talk out loud, right? I can hear your thoughts."
Sanchia dropped the key and backed away to the corner of her room. She stared at Clef, thinking rapidly. She did not like the idea of a scribed item reading her mind. Not one damned bit. She tried to remember all the things she'd thought since she'd started talking to him. Had she given away any secrets? Could Clef even hear the thoughts she hadn't known she'd been thinking? "If there's risk in exposing yourself to him," she thought, "it's a risk you've already taken." Glowering, she walked back over, knelt, touched a digit to the key, and demanded, "What the hell do you mean, hear my thoughts?"
"Okay, wait, sorry, poor phrasing. I can hear some of your thoughts. I can hear them if you think them hard enough."
She picked him up. "What does that mean, think them hard enough?"
"Why not try thinking something hard and I'll let you know."
Sanchia thought something very hard at Clef.
"Very funny," said Clef. "Obviously, I can't do as you suggest, as I don't have the necessary orifices."
"Wait," thought Sanchia. "You can really hear this?"
"Yeah."
"You can hear what I'm thinking right now?"
"Yeah."
"Every single word?"
"No, I'm just saying yeah for no reason. Yes, yes, I can hear you."
She wasn't sure how she felt about this. It was as if Clef had moved into a room upstairs inside her mind and was whispering to her through a hole in the ceiling. She struggled to remember what she'd been talking to him about. "What do you open, Clef?" she asked him.
"What do I open?"
"You're a key, right? So that means you open something. Unless you don't remember that either."
"Oh, no, no, I remember that."
"So what do you open?"
"Anything."
There was a silence. "Huh?" said Sanchia.
"Huh what?"
asked Clef. "You open anything?"
"Yes."
"What do you mean, anything?"
"I mean what I said. Anything. I open anything that has a lock, and even a few things that don't."
"What? Bullshit."
"It's true."
"Bullshit, it's true."
"You don't believe me? Why not try it out?"
Sanchia considered it and had an idea. She walked over to her open closet. Sitting in the corner was her collection of practice locks, specimens she'd ripped out of doors or stolen from mechanists' shops, which she labored over every other night, refining her skills. "If you're lying," she said, "you've picked the exact wrong person to lie to."
"Watch," said Clef, "and observe."
Sanchia picked up one of the locks, a Miranda brass, which was generally considered to be one of the more formidable conventional locks, meaning not scribed, in Tavan. Sanchia herself, with all her talents, usually took about 3 to 5 minutes to pick it.
"What do I do?" she asked.
"Just put you in the keyhole?"
"What else would you do with a key?"
Sanchia lined Clef up, gave him a mistrustful glance, and slid the golden key into the lock. Instantly, there was a loud click, and the Miranda brass sprang open. Sanchia stared. "Holy shit," she whispered.
"Believe me now," said Clef.
Sanchia dropped the Miranda brass, picked up another, this one a Genzetti, not as durable as a Miranda, but more complicated, and popped Clef in. Click. "Oh my god," said Sanchia. "What in all harboring hell? How are you doing that?"
"Oh, it's easy. All closed things wish to open. They're made to open. They're just made to be really reluctant about it. It's a matter of asking them from the right way, from inside themselves."
"So you're just a polite lockpick?"
"That's a really reductive way of thinking about it, but sure, yeah, whatever."
They went through the rest of the locks, one by one. Every time, The second cleft penetrated the keyhole. The lock sprang open.
I don't believe it, said Sanchia.
This is what I am, girl, said Clef. This is what I do.
She stared into space, thinking, and an inevitable idea quickly captured her thoughts. With Clef in her hands, she could rob the commons absolutely blind, build up the savings to pay the black market Physicaras to make her normal again, and skip town. Maybe she didn't even need the 20,000 her client was dangling in front of her. But Sanchia was pretty sure her client was from one of the four merchant houses, since that was who dealt in scribed items. And she couldn't exactly use a lockpick to fend off a dozen bounty hunters, all looking to lop her to pieces. And that was precisely what the houses would send her way. Sanchia was good at running, and with Clef in her hand, she could maybe run quite far. But outrunning the merchant houses was difficult to ponder.
Well, that was boring, said Clef. You don't have any better locks than that?
Sanchia snapped out of her reverie. Huh? No.
Really? None?
No mechanist has ever dreamed up anything stronger than a Miranda brass. There's no need to, not with scribed locks available for the really rich people.
Huh? Scribed locks? What do you mean?
Sanchia pulled a face and wondered how in the hell to explain scribing. Okay, well, there's these things called sigils. It's some kind of angelic alphabet that the scribers discovered or something. Anyways, when you write the right sigils on things, you can make them different. Like, if you write the sigil for stone on a piece of wood, it becomes more like stone, a little stronger, a little more waterproof. It convinces the wood to be something it isn't.
Sounds tedious. What's this got to do with locks?
Hell, I don't know how to put this. The scribers figured out a way to combine sigils to make a bunch of new languages. Ones that are more specific, more powerful. Ones that can convince items to be really, really different. So they can make locks that only open for one key in the whole world, and they're completely unpickable. It's not a matter of pressing and pulling on the right lever or something. The lock knows there's only one key it's supposed to open for.
Huh, said Clef. Interesting. You got any of those lying around?
What? Hell no, I don't have a scribed lock. If I was rich enough to afford a scribed lock, I wouldn't be living in a rookery where the latrine is just a bucket and a window.
Yeesh, I didn't want to know that, said Clef, disgusted.
It's impossible to pick scribed locks anyways. Everyone knows that.
No. I told you. Everything closed wants to open.
Sanchia had never heard of a rig that was capable of picking scribed locks. But then, she'd never heard of one that could see and talk either. You really think you can pick scribed locks?
Of course I can. You want me to prove that, too?
He said, smug.
Think of the biggest, meanest scribed lock you can, and I'll bust it down like it was made of straw.
Sanchia looked out her window. It was almost dawn. The sun crawling over the edge of the distant Campo walls and spilling across the leaning rooftops of the commons. I'll think about it, she said. She put him in her false floor, shut the door, and lay on her bed. Alone in her room, Sanchia thought back to her last meeting with Sark at the abandoned fishery building on the Anifesto Channel. She remembered navigating all the tripwires and traps that Sark had set for her. Insurance, Sark had called it, since he'd known that Sanchia, with all her talents, would be the only one who could safely circumvent them. As she gingerly stepped over the last tripwire and trotted upstairs, she'd glimpsed his gnarled, scarred face emerging from the shadows of the reeking building. And to her surprise, he'd been grinning.
I've got a corker for you, son, he'd rasped. I've got a big fish on the line and no mistake.
Marino Sarcolini, her fence, agent, and the closest thing she had to a friend in this world. though few would have thought to befriend Sark, for he was one of the most disfigured people Sanchia had ever seen. Sark had one foot, no ears, no nose, and he was missing every other finger on his hands. Sometimes it seemed about half his body was scar tissue. It took him hours to get around the city, especially if he had to take any stairs. But his mind was still quick and cunning. He was a former canal man for Company Candiano, an officer who'd organized theft, espionage, and sabotage against the other three merchant houses. The position was called such because the work, like the Tavan's canals, was filthy. But then the founder of Company Candiano had gone mysteriously mad. The company had almost collapsed, and nearly everyone had gotten fired except for the most valuable scrivers. Suddenly all kinds of people who'd been used to campo life found themselves living in the commons. And there, Sark had tried to keep doing what he'd always done, thieving, sabotaging, and spying on the four main merchant houses. Except in the commons, he hadn't had the protection of a merchant house. So when he'd finally gotten sniffed out by agents of Morsini House after one daring raid, they'd taken him and ruined him beyond repair. Such were the rules of life in the commons. When she finally saw him that day in the fishery, Sanchia had been taken aback by the look on Sark's face, for she'd never seen him delighted. A person like Sark had little to be delighted about. It was unsettling. He'd started talking. He'd vaguely described the job. She'd listened. When he'd told her the price tag, she'd scoffed and told him that the whole thing had to be a scam. No one was going to pay them that much. At that, he'd tossed her a leather envelope. She'd glanced in it and gasped. Inside had been nearly 3,000 in paper duvats, an absurd rarity in the commons.
"An advance," said Sark.
"What? We never get advances."
"I know."
"Especially not in paper money."
"I know."
She'd looked at him, wary. "Is this a design job, Sark? I don't deal in scribing designs, you know that. That shit will get us both harpered."
"And that's not what this is, if you can believe it. The job is just a box, a small box. And since scribing designs are usually dozens of pages long, if not hundreds, then I think we can rule that out."
"Then what is in the box?"
"We don't know."
"And who owns the box?"
"We don't know."
"And who wants the box?"
"Someone with 20,000 devots."
She'd considered it. This hadn't been terribly unusual for their line of work. Usually it was better for all parties involved to know as little as possible about one another. "So," she'd said, "how are we supposed to get the box?" He'd grinned wider, flashing crooked teeth.
"I'm glad you asked."
And they'd sat and hashed it all out right then and there. Afterward, though, after the glee of planning it out, preparing it, discussing it there in the dark of the fishery, a queer dread had seeped into Sanchia's stomach. "There anything I should be worried about here, Sark?"
"Anything I know? No."
"Okay, then anything you suspect?"
"I think it's housework,"
he'd said.
"That's the only people who could toss around 3,000 in paper. But we've done work for the houses before when they need deniability. So in some ways it's familiar. Do as they ask and they'll pay well, and let you keep your guts where they are."
"So why is this different?" He'd thought for a moment and said,
"With this price tag, well, it's got to be coming from the top, yeah? A founder or a founderkin. People who live behind walls and walls and walls. And the higher you go in the houses, the richer and madder and stupider these people get. We could be stealing some princeling's plaything, or we could be stealing the wand of Procides the Great himself, for all I know."
"Comforting."
"Yeah. So we need to play this right, Sanchia."
"I always play it right.
I know you're a professional. But if this is coming from the echelons, we need to be extra cautious.
He'd held out his arms.
I mean, look at me. You can see what happens when you cross them. And you?
She'd looked at him, eyes hard. And me?
Well, they used to own you. So you know what they can be like.
Sanchia slowly sat up in bed. She was achingly tired, but she still couldn't sleep. That comment, they used to own you. It had bothered her then, and it bothered her now. The scar on the side of her head prickled. So did the scars on her back, and she had a lot more there. They don't own me still, she insisted to herself. My days are free now. But this, she knew, was not entirely true. She opened the closet, opened the false floor, and picked Clef up. Let's go, she said.
Finally,
Clef said, excited. Chapter 5 Sanchia ran a string through Clef's head and hung him around her neck, hidden in her jerkin. Then she walked down her rookery stairs and slipped out the side door. She scanned the muddy fairway for any watchful eyes and started off. By now, the streets of Foundryside were filling up with people, tottering or skulking over the wooden sidewalks. Most were laborers, staggering off to work with their heads still aching from too much cane wine the night before. The air was hazy and humid, and the mountains rose in the distance, steaming and dark. Sanchia had never been in the uplands beyond Tavan. Most Tavanis hadn't. Living in Tavan might be rough, but the mountainous jungles were a lot worse. Sanchia turned a corner and spotted a body lying in the fairway up ahead, its clothes dark with blood. She crossed the street to avoid it.
Holy shit, said Clef.
What?
Was that guy dead?
How can you see, Clef? You don't have eyes.
Do you know how your eyes work?
That's a good point, I guess.
Right. And you did see that, right? That guy was dead?
She looked back and observed how much of the man's throat was missing. For his sake, I sure hope so.
Whoa. Is anyone going to do something about it?
Like what?
Like, I don't know, take care of the body?
Eh, maybe. I've heard there's a market for human bones in the commons north of here. Never found out exactly what they wanted them for, though.
No, I mean, is anyone going to try to catch the killer? Don't you have any authorities who try to make sure that stuff doesn't happen?
Oh, said Sanchia. No. And she explained. Since it was the merchant houses that made Tavan great, it was probably inevitable that most city property would wind up being owned by them. But the houses were also all competitors who jealously protected their scribing designs. For, as everyone knew, intellectual property is the easiest kind to steal. This meant that all the land the houses owned was fiercely guarded, hidden behind walls and gates and checkpoints, inaccessible to all except those who possessed the proper markers. The house lands were so restricted and controlled, they were practically different countries, which the city of Tavan more or less acknowledged. Four walled-off little city-states, all crammed into Tavan, all wildly different regions with their own schools, their own living quarters, their own marketplaces, their own cultures. These merchant house enclaves, the campos, took up about 80% of Tavan. But if you didn't work for a house or weren't affiliated with them, in other words, if you were poor, lame, uneducated, or just the wrong sort of person, then you lived in the remaining 20% of Tavan, a wandering, crooked ribbon of streets and city squares and in-between places, the commons. There were a lot of differences between the commons and the campos. The campos, for instance, had waste systems, fresh water, well-maintained roads, and their buildings tended to stay standing, which wasn't always the case in the commons. The Campos also had a plethora of scribed devices to make their lives easier, which the commons certainly did not. Walk into the commons showing off a fancy scribed trinket, and you'd have your throat slit and your treasure snatched in an instant. Because another thing that the Campos had that the commons did not was laws. Each Campo had its own rules and law enforcement, all of which fully applied within their rambling, crooked boundaries. But because each Campo's individuality was considered sacrosanct, this meant there was no defined set of citywide laws, nor was there any real citywide law enforcement or judicial system, or even prisons. To establish such things, the Tavani elite had decided would be to suggest that the power of Tavan superseded the powers of the Campos. So, if you were part of a merchant house and resided on a Campo, you had such things. If you didn't, and you lived in the commons, then you were just there. And considering all the disease and starvation and violence and whatnot, you probably weren't there for long.
"Holy hell," said Clef. "How do you live like that?"
"Same way everyone lives, I guess," said Sanchia, taking a left. "One day at a time." Finally, they came to their destination. Up ahead, the wet, rambling rookeries of Foundryside came to a sharp stop at a tall, smooth white wall, about 60 feet high, clean and perfect, and unblemished.
"We're coming up on something big inscribed, aren't we?" said Clef.
"How can you tell?"
"I just can."
That disturbed her. She could tell if a rig was scribed if she got within a few feet of it. She'd start hearing that muttering in her head. But Clef seemed to be able to do it from dozens of feet away. She walked along the wall until she found it. Set in the face of the wall was a huge engraved bronze door, intricate and ornate, with a house logo typo in the middle, the hammer and the chisel.
"That's a hell of a big door," said Clef. "What is this place?"
"This is the Candiano Campo Wall. That's their logo typo in the door."
"Who are they?"
"Merchant house. Used to be the biggest one, but then their founder went mad, and I hear they had to lock him away in a tower somewhere."
"Probably not good for business, that."
"No." She approached the door and heard a faint chanting in her head. No one really knows what they use this door for. Some say it's for secret business, when the Candianos want to snatch someone out of the commons. Others say it's just so they can sneak their horrors in and out. I've never seen it open. It's not guarded because they think no one can break it, since it's scribed, of course. She stood before the door. It was tall, about 10 feet high or so. "But you think you can, Clef?"
"Oh, I'd love to try,"
he said with surprising relish. "How are you going to do it?"
"I don't know yet. I'll have to see. Come on. Even if I can't, what's the worst that can happen?"
The answer, Sanchia knew, was a lot. Tampering with anything related to the merchant houses was a great way to lose a hand or a head. She knew this wasn't like her, to be walking around the commons with stolen goods in broad daylight, especially considering this particular stolen good was the most advanced scribed rig she'd ever seen. It was unprofessional. It was risky. It was stupid. But that nonchalant comment of Sark's, "They used to own you. You know what they're like," it echoed in her head. She was surprised to find how much she resented it. And she wasn't sure why. She'd always known when she was doing work for the merchant houses, and it had never inspired her to play the job wrong before. But to have him just come out and say that, it burned her.
"What are you waiting for?" begged Clef.
She approached the door, eyeing the scrivings running along its frame. She heard the faint muttering in her head, as she did whenever she was close to anything altered. Then she knelt and put Clef into the lock, and the muttering turned into a scream. Screaming questions poured into her mind, all of them directed at Clef, asking him dozens, if not hundreds, of questions, trying to figure out what he was. Many of them went by too fast for her to understand, but she caught some of them. "Be you the bejeweled spur of which the lady wrought on the fifth day?" bellowed the door at Clef.
"No, but..."
"Be you the tool of the master, the wand, Ferris, with the Widdershin's etchings, who shall have only access once a fortnight?"
"Well, see, I..."
"Be you the trembling light, forged to find the flaws of Tone."
"Okay, hold on now, but..."
And on and on and on. It all went too fast for Sanchia to really understand. And how she was even hearing it was stupefying to her. But she could still catch snatches of the conversation. It sounded like security questions, like the scribe door was expecting a specific key. And it was slowly figuring out that Clef was not that key. "Be you an armament Ferris, forged for the breaking of the oaths which have been laid upon me?"
"Partially," Clef said.
A pause.
"Partially?" "Yeah."
"How are you partially an armament Ferris, forged for the breaking of the oaths which have been laid upon me?"
"Well, it's complicated. Let me explain."
Information poured back and forth between Clef and the door. Sanchia was still trying to catch her breath. It was like trying to swallow an ocean all at once. She suspected that, as long as she was touching Clef, she could hear whatever he heard as well. But all she could think was, that's what a scribe device is? That? It's like a mind, they think? She'd never have expected this. Certainly, she was used to hearing a faint muttering when she was close to scribed items, but she'd still assumed they were just things, just objects.
"Explain it to me again," said Clef.
"When the signals are given," said the door, now uncertain, "all shafts are retracted and outward pivot is performed."
"Okay, but at what speed do you pivot outward?"
asked Clef. What speed?"
"Yeah, how hard do you pivot outward?"
"Well?" More messages poured back and forth between the door and Clef. She began to understand. When the proper scribed key was inserted into the door, it would send a signal to the door which would tell it to withdraw its bolts and pivot outward. But Clef was confusing it somehow, asking it too many questions about which direction it was supposed to pivot, and how fast or hard.
"Well, obviously, I've gotten past the second rung,"
Clef said to the door. "This is true."
"And the frame triggers are still in place."
"One second. This is verified."
"So what I'm saying here is..."
A massive amount of information coursed through the two entities. Sanchia couldn't understand a bit of it. "All right, I think I see. So, be you certain that this does not count as opening?"
"Positive."
"And be you certain that the security directives are maintained?"
"They look maintained to me. Don't they look that way to you?"
"I suppose."
"Listen, there's no rule against any of this, is there?"
"Well, I guess not."
"So let's give it a shot, eh?"
All right." Silence. Then the door started quivering. And then, there was a loud crack, and the door opened. But it opened inward, and astonishingly hard. So hard that, since she was still holding Clef, and Clef was still in the lock, she was almost jerked off her feet. Clef popped out as the door fell backward, its bronze face falling away, and then she saw the streets of the Candiano Campo within. Sanchia stared down an empty Candiano street, alarmed, terrified, and bewildered. It was a totally different world on the other side of the wall. Clean cobblestone streets, tall buildings with sculpted facades of white moss clay. Colorful banners and flags hanging from cords running over the paths, and water. Fountains with just water in them. Real, clear, running water. She could see three of them, even from here. Even though she was stunned and terrified, she couldn't help but think.
They use water. Clean water. As decoration? Clean water was impossibly rare in the commons, and most people drank weak cane wine instead. To just have it bubbling away in the streets for no reason was incomprehensible. She came to her wits. She stared at the door and saw a ragged hole in the wall beside it. She realized the door had never retracted its bolts. It had just swung backward so hard that the shafts had torn right through the wall.
Holy shit, whispered Sanchia.
She turned and ran, fast.
Ta-da, said Clef in her head. See, I told you I could do it.
What the hell, she thought, running. You broke the door. You broke the goddamn door to a goddamn campo wall.
Well, yeah, I told you I'd get in.
What the hell did you do, Clef? What the hell did you do?
I convinced him that opening inward didn't really count as opening, said Clef, so it wouldn't trigger a whole host of his warding questions about me breaking it open. It's not breaking open the door if the door doesn't actually think it's opening, right? And then I just had to convince him to open inward hard enough that we didn't have to bother with any of his bolts, which were the most protected.
He sounded relaxed, even drunk. She got the mad idea that cracking a scribed device gave Clef something akin to a powerful sexual release. She dashed around a corner, then leaned up against the wall, panting.
But, I didn't think you'd scrumming break the door in.
Scrumming? What? What's that mean?
Sanchia then quickly attempted to explain that a scrum hole on a ship referred to the vents that allowed waves to wash out the fecal matter in the latrines. But some matter inevitably built up in the scrum hole, so crewmen would have to shove poles down into the holes to clear it out, which, sailors being somewhat filthy-minded people, inevitably became slang for the sexual practice of...
Okay, crap, I get it, said Clef. Stop!
You can do that to scribed devices? She asked.
Sure, said Clef. Scribed rigs, as you call them, are filled with commands, and the commands convince the object to be something it's not. It's like a debate. The debate has to be clear and make sense for you to be persuaded. But you can argue with the commands, confuse them, dupe them. It's easy.
But how did you know to do that? How do you know any of that? You'd only just heard of scribed devices last night.
Oh, right.
There was a long pause.
I don't know,
he said, and he sounded somewhat unsettled. You don't know?
No.
Do you remember any more, Clef, or is it still just the dark for you? Another long silence.
Can we talk about something else, please?
Asked Clef quietly. Sanchia took that as a no. Can you do that to any scribed device?
Well, my specialty is stuff that wants to stay closed. Apertures, doors, barriers, connection points. For example, he said, I can't do anything about the plate in your head.
Sanchia froze. What?
Said Clef. Did I say something wrong?
How'd you know about the plate in my head? She demanded.
Because it's scribed. It's talking. It's convincing itself it's something it isn't. I can sense it. Just like you can hear other scribed things.
How can you sense it?
I just do. It's what I do.
You're saying feeling out and tricking scribed items is what you do? Even though you didn't know what it was you did just 5 minutes ago?
I guess,
Clef said, now sounding confused again.
I can't quite remember.
Sanchia slowly leaned back against the wall. The world felt wobbly and distant to her as she tried to process all of this. To begin with, it now seemed abundantly clear that Clef was suffering from some kind of memory loss. It felt odd to diagnose a key with a mental affliction, given that Sanchia still didn't understand how or even if he possessed something resembling a mind. If he did have a mind,
That long time spent trapped in the dark, decades, if not centuries, would have been more than enough to break it. Perhaps Clef was damaged. Either way,